Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. In her newest performance, today's guest, actress, director, and teacher Rhodessa Jones, poses a question. When did your hands become a weapon? It's the title of a new performance she has created with her long-running Medea Project, which makes theater by and for incarcerated women and the Women's HIV Center at UCSF. The performance explores the trauma and realities of domestic violence and sexual assault, but goes beyond putting on a spectacle. Instead, the show offers a pathway to healing from abuse and a pathway to prevent further trauma. If you're in the Bay Area, When Did Your Hands Become a Weapon runs October 25th through November 4th at the Brava Theater in San Francisco. And I know so many of you are not in the Bay Area. You can also see a lot of Rhodessa's work online if you just search for Rhodessa Jones or the Medea Project, M-E-D-E-A. Rhodessa Jones is co-artistic director of the San Francisco-based performance company Cultural Odyssey, which is celebrating its 40th year, and she directs the Medea Project, a performance workshop committed to incarcerated women's social and personal transformation. And Rhodessa Jones joins us in studio. Hi, Rhodessa. Thank you so much for coming in.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Rhodessa, what's so amazing about your work is you have been doing Me Too deep, deep work for decades.
Yes.
Going so far. You know, I just want to share a personal story. When I first moved here, and I think it was 95, I saw one of the Medea Project's performances at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts. It completely changed me.
Oh, Candlelight. You must have seen Candlelight, yes.
So you bring women who are incarcerated on stage to tell their own stories, and I'll never forget looking at the prison guards who were in front of the stage, and they told the audience, please leave right after the performance ends so these women can have a little bit of time with their families.
Yes, yes. And God bless Mike Hennessy, who was the sheriff at that point, you know, and we had great conversations, he and I would get an idea in the shower. I tell people the Medea Project kind of came to me in the shower, and I said, I'm going to go down and talk to the sheriff. And he was very open about art, and he really understood and believed that art could save lives. And so I would tell him what I wanted to do, and he'd say, okay, well. And he said, well, how can we do it? And I'd say, well, you know, because there were also deputies that were really interested in the process, because I was out at San Bruno for a long time, and they would just kind of come by and watch the process of people crying, you know, and I'm no day at the beach, you know, so it's like, you know, you got to come with the real, you know, tell the truth and shame the devil. Yeah.
What are your thoughts about this moment we're in right now, given all of the work that you have done? I sometimes wonder about people like you. When you go to bed at night and you think about where we're at and all the work you've done, how are you making sense of this?
Well, I watch all the news on television, and of course, it gets to be repetitive, and it's not always, you know, people will criticize social media, but I feel like the large news productions on television, either they're all talking about the same thing, and they're not talking about things that we are, you know, we know about as activists and as artists, and at the same time, I can't look away. And so then I'll usually kind of drift off to sleep, and then I have to watch some comedy. I have to watch David Chappelle. I love David Chappelle, and that's how I kind of get off to sleep. But we're in a free fall. We're in a free fall, and it's so heartbreaking because I came of age in America when we really were experiencing a cultural revolution, the 60s, and Woodstock, and, you know, the March on Washington, and the war moratoriums. I grew legs during this time and had great talks with really amazing thinkers. Even Ram Dass. I remember Ram Dass coming to the University of Rochester, I think it was, and just talking to us about Be Here Now. You know, and I guess, okay, I was a hippie, but it worked, you know. And so right now, I feel like we're in a free fall, and all I can do is hold my own community, the people around me, accountable, and also in conversation. Let us keep talking, and our children. I'll tell you a story. A couple of weeks ago, my neighbor, he's a divine little boy. He's about 11 years old. And the little girls love him. They just love him. I think he sees girls for people. And one day these girls were peeking around and I got out of my car and they're like running down the street and leaving him notes and paintings and pictures. And I see him in the backyard. He's just kind of playing basketball. And I say, you know, you got to remember that girls really like you. I said, you know, and he says, huh? And I said, no, they like you, not just as a boyfriend. I said, I think that you like them, so honor it. And he said, honor? I said, all your life, remember that women can trust you. I said, so, and don't let that go. And I thought, this child is looking at me. I said, really, I mean it. I said, because you're delightful and little girls, you make little girls happy. And he was just like, I do. And I hope he carries it with him. I hope he does. Something as simple as that in your life, somebody will stop. Because we don't do that anymore. You know, young people are in their own community. We're the old farts, you know, and at the same time, we still have to be the elders. And so I guess to answer your question, I take my role very seriously, and I will agree that we're in free fall. Mm. And at the same time, as we're falling even, who do you reach out and try to hold? Who do you, you know, who do you help ground when you fall in a place that feels like you might be able to stand for a minute? But no, it's very, very, it's very heartbreaking right now in America. It's very, but at the same time, there's something exciting about, like, Me Too and the whole idea of dealing with domestic violence, bringing it out. It's about unearthing these things that we didn't talk about for so long. And women lived with it. You know, a woman many years ago wrote a piece in the Medea Project, and it's called My Mother Keeps It. And it's all about her mother telling her that she came home and found her at 5 years old. Her little bottom is naked and somebody has assaulted her, and the child is like out cold. And she says, my mother addressed everybody in the house about it, but nobody remembers that. Now everybody has gone blind. Mm-hmm. And that's, I feel like, happened with the whole kind of thing that, you know, that happened in Washington. Was like these women that we felt, okay, we got this. Gone blind, you know, or maybe it's a strange kind of power that we're hoping for, that women in power are hoping for.
It's also, when we were covering the Kavanaugh hearings during the breaks, we opened the lines and said, does anyone want to share their stories? Rodessa, woman after woman, and one man who I still think about his story, have called in to talk about being assaulted.
Yes.
So many for the first time.
Yes.
The man who called in, I think he's 72. Some of the women who called in are over 60. They've never shared these stories before.
Yes. I have one of my teachers, a mentor. She's in her late 70s, and she comes and sits in on our rehearsals, and she was saying to us, when I was coming up, it happened all the time, you know, date rape, groping, and you just let it pass. You let it pass and move on. And then I hear Lady Gaga on Stephen Colbert talking about how trying to make folks understand that you put all that in a box so that you can live, you know. But that's over. That's done. You know, women are mad as hell, and we're on the warpath. And I really believe that you have to tell the truth and shame the devil. Our daughters need to hear that, no, it's not okay. It's not okay to be treated this way, and we don't have to protect anybody anymore.
Well, and again, you've been doing this for decades in prisons across the country and also in South Africa.
Yes.
How did you get into that work, and when did it click for you to think, not only let's talk about the stories in prison, but let's bring these women on stage to share the stories with the public? Can you talk about how that came to be?
Well, first off, theater saved my life. You know, long before I was in the jails or an activist, dancing, performing, it was a place I felt safe and also I was working with San Francisco artists where we were encouraged to be autobiographical. And so I could talk about who I was in this whole American tapestry. So that was the first thing. And because my story sometimes is so outrageous, I got a call from the California Arts Council asking me would I go into the jails and teach aerobics to incarcerated women. And I was just like totally, I was like, okay, fine, I'll do it. And went into the jails and I started to talk about myself. I was, at that time I turned 40, 42, and I was incredible, I was in great shape. Back bends, handstands, no-handed cartwheels. And I'm talking all the while about being, a mother before I was a woman. I got pregnant at 15, had a daughter at 16. I talked about my own dangerous dance with dangerous men and drugs, and the women are sitting there and they said, "Can we talk? We want to talk." And I was like, and they were all just hanging on. Like I said, let's agree that everything that we say stays in this room. And also, no woman's pain is greater than another woman's pain, and we all have to be willing to listen. And your radio show, the stories just started pouring out about, and I talked about survival versus being a victim. And I still, I'm back in the jails right now. I'm going in on Tuesday nights here downtown on 7th Street. And I tell the women, I say, you know, I remind them of how powerful they really are. They've come through the fire. They're, you know, and at the same time, back to Me Too. It has always been just a given that if we're talking and telling the truth, then women, these women just, I mean, horrific stories of being kidnapped. One woman the other night was saying how her grandfather had assaulted every woman in her family. Everyone. And she said at 7 years old, her little sister was born. And she said for the next 2 years, she watched him watch this child. And she said, "Oh no, I'm going to, he's not going to do this to her." And this all came out of a poem. We had given the exercise of write a letter to your younger self. And her letter was really about those nights and how she protected herself when her grandfather would come and do this to her. And it was just stunning. It was so sparse and so heartfelt and so immediate. And she said she went to her dad and said her dad and mom weren't together, and she told her father. And he went back and told, spoke to her grandmother. And the grandmother, of course, alerted the grandfather, who went back, left the United States and went back to its country, the Philippines, left. And just because, and it's like, what is that?
Wow.
What is that, you know? But then there's an African-American woman, when we talk about holding secrets for so long, we just didn't want to make any more trouble for him, you know? So when we're being assaulted in our own communities, we don't talk about it, we don't tell, because, well, we're under the gun. The history of slavery is so heavy. But at the same time, why do we, as women, have to be the ones who carry this? Mm-hmm. Why? Mm-hmm. You know, so it's in the Medea Project, we always use a Greek myth. So we are largely using the Trojan women. And last night I had a meeting with Elizabeth Spackman and Faye Bongalan, who are really doing dramaturgy work with me. And Elizabeth said, "Verdessa, Trojan women is just about these women walking around in the midst of war thinking everything is really all effed up. It's just everything's a mess." But I think that's a great, it's a great landscape in which to talk about domestic violence and assault and homegrown terrorism, you know, and back to the environment that this particular chief of commander in chief has brought us to this place, you know, and all the people that are willing to still stand up for him, that, you know. Yeah.
Well, and the stories that these women share in the prisons are so heavy. Talking about the 7-year-old who wanted to protect her newborn sister from the grandfather, and this is just one story. Can you also talk about what happens to a society like ours that tries not to go there, that where you brush it under the rug as a society? Because when we heard from these women talking about the teacher, the boyfriend, the partner, whoever it was that assaulted them, it's almost like it's on the surface.
Yes.
And we tend not to really go deep into that trauma in this country.
And what we will realize eventually is that we're only encouraging people to bring half of themselves, you know, to as we're talking about the free fall. What's going to happen in 20, 30 years, you know? What's going to happen politically? if the people are holding on to these horrible memories. And but I don't think it's going to I think that the door is opened. Mm-hmm. Being in South Africa, you know, I work in South Africa a lot. And I met a young woman who was, when I met her, she was like 15. And she'd already been in prison for 3 or 4 years. And she and her brother, she and her brother had found out from their younger cousin that this doctor, who was well known in their particular community, was assaulting this 9-year-old girl. And she had told everybody, nobody would listen. This girl, and she and her brother were twins. It's very mythical. He was also in jail, you know. They lured this man out to the bush. Mm. They had dug a hole. They really, really, they actually pushed him into the hole and set it on fire. And she said, well, nobody else was doing anything, and he shouldn't even be allowed to live and walk around. And I'm looking at our babies. These are our cubs, you know. And she said, well, nobody was doing anything. Mm. And still they had to do time. But she said, but at least he won't be out there hurting other kids, you know. And it's like, okay. And what you're warned about is, don't judge me. You know, we have lived too long with everybody holding on to these horrible secrets. Mm. And really, they're not secrets.
Right.
Like you're describing people calling into your show. And that's what we've got to realize. They're not secrets.
And I just want to acknowledge Laura Wenis, our producer, just wrote me and said several men called in, but most of them were not even able to speak.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, the shows were so intense that we kind of forgot to even talk about that because it was just so intense, mm-hmm. these stories. But we were so, I guess, grateful that we could have this place, this space, mm-hmm. where people feel comfortable to call in and share their stories.
But, you know, also for guys, males, and this is something I'm still working on with young women who are rump shakers, get paid, bling. Mm. And I say, you know, do you really think about the guy, you know, because he has to play stoic. He has to play the man. He has to be even a bit larger than life. So that gives him the right to punch you, to hit you, to abuse you. And at the same time, what do we bring to a relationship when it's really about pay my phone bill, buy me a car, you know? And guys have been taught that if they can, they do, mm-hmm. you know? And you think about the men who couldn't even talk about. The shame is so intense that they can't even talk about being insulted because it's too much like, excuse my French, but they treated you like a bitch. And what does that mean? You know, it's like they treated you like a woman, you know, so that's why you can't. Is that what we're talking about? You know, but I really believe that a bitch stands for being in total control of herself. That's what I believe, you know. Yeah. And I'm trying to do that. I don't work as much with young men anymore, but when I do, one of my main questions for them is, do you want to live or do you want to die? Hmm. Because they don't know. They don't know anymore. That is awful. And then don't forget the police riding up in there. And, you know, they're scared. You know, and also they have the guns. They're an organized, legalized gang. You know, so they, and the war is on, you know. Even if a boy runs away or a man runs away, it's on, you know.
Today we're speaking with Rodessa Jones, co-artistic director of the San Francisco-based performance company Cultural Odyssey. They're celebrating their 40th year. She also directs the Medea Project, a performance workshop committed to incarcerated women's social and personal transformation. And Rodessa's latest piece is called When Did Your Hands Become a Weapon? It's a project that she created with the Medea Project and the Women's HIV Center at UCSF. It explores the trauma and realities of domestic violence and sexual assault, and it offers a pathway to healing and also to prevent further trauma. If you're in the Bay Area, you can see When Did Your Hands Become a Weapon from October 25th to November 4th at the Brava Theater in San Francisco. And if you'd like to join us, you know, if you'd like to talk about the time that we're in, what you're thinking about right now, if you've got a story to share, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. If you've seen Rodessa's work and want to talk about just how powerful it is to see these women share their stories on stage. We'd love to hear from you. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Talk about the process involved of these women sharing their stories with complete strangers, putting it all out there. How does it affect them? Because you've been, I've seen your stuff for years, and you have some of the same women working with you. How have they been affected by that process?
At first, I think it, what I realize happens is that when we speak, myself, because anybody that asks me, how do you do it? You've got to be willing to put your stuff on the table. You can't play teacher, director, and sit back. You've got, that's how you lay a path. You talk about where you've been. And I see that now that my company, what, the Medea Project is 30 years old or something, there are people in the group, they know that it's about us bringing our stuff out. And then the prisoner, the women living with HIV, the ex-offenders, they realize that there is a voice to be found. And I do a lot of theater games, you know, just warming up the voice, moving around, opening the body, you know, jumping, rolling, teaching women how to get mad. Get mad. What does that look like? We used to have the no chorus. It was all little girls. And it was just them. How loud can you say no? And I remember parents and grandparents coming in and being freaked out. Why are you telling them about this stuff? I said, trust me, they already know. They just don't know what to do. And so to answer your question, it's a theatrical process, but it's also the first thing that I found happens if I start to speak my own truth is that it gives women a platform to voice their concerns, you know. And we, another night inside, one of the women who's HIV positive, and she's just been through it. She was talking about just, you know, being a junkie on the street. And I saw the women inside. They started to look at her and look at us differently, like, oh, this is real. You know, because they realized this woman was telling tales that they already knew. And she, Deborah, she gets to expound and share and teach. So as you're back to your question, I think it makes everybody a bit stronger and a bit more focused as to what you can do with your life as just a wise woman. I mean, if we can be all activists, wonderful. But it's like back to my little neighbor. I mean, I am an elder. I am, as I think Maya Angelou said, you know, I am the mother to all. Bring them all to me. And that's kind of large, but I love that. It's like, I love that that's where I am now. You know, I mean, I still like to kiss and snuggle a little bit, but I sure like to sit around and make a good cake and drink some tea or some wine and pass this chalice of truth around, and everybody gets to either fill it or sip from it. Yeah.
Rodessa Jones is co-artistic director of the San Francisco-based performance company Cultural Odyssey. And if you're in the Bay Area, I hope you get a chance to see her newest performance, When Did Your Hands Become a Weapon? It explores the trauma and realities of domestic violence and sexual assault, and also offers a pathway to healing and really focuses on what it will take to prevent further trauma. It runs October 25th through November 4th at the Brava Theater in San Francisco. And if you're not in the Bay Area, we have a lot of listeners who are outside of the area. If you go online, you can search for Rodessa Jones and watch some of these incredible performances. A number of the pieces involved with the Medea Project are online. If you just search Rodessa Jones, find more information at yourcallradio.org. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our media roundtable. We'll discuss coverage of the alleged killing of Washington Post columnist Jamal Khashoggi. Mounting evidence points to the Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman's role in this gruesome killing. We will also talk about how casino billionaire Sheldon Adelson is influencing Donald Trump's policies on Israel. This is a Republican mega donor who gave $20 million to Trump's campaign. and is spending about $55 million to keep Republican control of Congress. That's tomorrow. If you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, yourcall@kalw.org. Today, we're speaking with Rodessa Jones, performance, actress, director, and teacher. She's artistic director of the Cultural Odyssey Performance Company, which is celebrating their 40th year. She also directs the Medea Project, a performance workshop committed to incarcerated women's social and personal transformation. Her newest piece, When Did Your Hands Become a Weapon, runs October 25th through November 4th at the Brava Theater in San Francisco. And if you have any questions or comments for Rodessa, if you'd like to talk about where we are right now after all of that coverage we did about Kavanaugh, and now he's on the Supreme Court. So many of you called in to share your personal stories about assault and how you're dealing with trauma. If you'd like to talk about that, and just also the power of bringing these stories to the stage. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. We have a question from Shipra, who says, can you explore what happened when The Color Purple came out and the NAACP were critical of it because it portrayed black men in a stereotypical way? What about the added pressure on black women to protect men in their community?
Well, the same thing happened with For Colored Girls with Ntozake Shange. She got a lot of pushback from men that should have understood that it's really about chronicling what's happened. You know, Toni Morrison says, I write the kind of books I want to read. And there should be room for all of us to do this, you know, to male, female. It's just common. I think it's less so when you think about what's happening with hip-hop and spoken word, and some of the young women that are stepping up and singing and chanting their truths. But I think we just have to be ready with a kind of fierceful love, you know. We're not backing down, care about you, but do you care about me? And the NAACP, I think that there is this whole idea, it's a very archaic idea that somehow the black male is more important than the female, and that's just over. That's just not happening. And let us not even feed it. I mean, I have in the Medea Project, we used to have something called the kicking dance, and I made it because women were moving through the world in their high heel shoes, and you get assaulted in the garage on the street, and it was just about taking him down. Mm-hmm. You know, and there were women that would be just embarrassed. Hmm. They'd be like, well, why would you do that? Especially, largely we were black women. You're going to do that to a brother? I said, we do it to anybody that steps to us. You know, it's like they've got to know that we are warriors, that, and that we always have been. You know, we have always have been. And it's like as we move into this, it's free fall, but it's very multicultural. The America cannot cannot deny that our working class is made up of all these women of all these colors. Mm-hmm. And again, back to When Did Your Hand Become a Weapon? This is one of the things I'm helping and facilitating with the show, is that I want my company to look at what's going on in Somalia, what's going on in Sudan, what's going on in the Congo, mm-hmm. you know, as far as like domestic violence and violence, you know, and also poverty is violent. You know, and so we cannot dwell on a few men having their feelings hurt. Mm. I mean, because I trust that there's a lot of righteous brothers out there who, you know, they might not say much, but they, you know, hear. I heard W. Kamau Bell talking about being in the company of Louis C.K. and Louis C.K. telling these stories about, you know, exposing himself. And he said, you know, we would kind of laugh, but it was like, you know, we were just kind of amazed that this cat was doing this. Yeah. And at the same time, I've gotten to watch Mr. Bell more, and I feel like he's a real solid brother. Mm, you know, you know, and he's a man that really loves women and loves his children, mm-hmm. and that's the kind of men that are out there too. Mm-hmm. You know, and hopefully they turn and say to men at the NAACP, look, you know, This is not, maybe not true for all of us, but she has a right to speak. You know, she has a right to write her story. Mm. Yeah.
Let's hear from a caller. Let's go to John in San Francisco. Hi, John. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose. How are you?
Good, thanks.
I've been listening to the program. I'm just been very moved by the subject matter, and just what she's doing is incredible. I'm actually a retired theater arts major. I've been involved in theater in the Bay Area for a number of years, and I really want to get involved with her program, because I just am very passionate about it. I'm also a big fan of Maya Angelou, and I just want to let her know that I just really feel such a great thing that she's doing.
Well, John, reach out to Brava. Brava's doing the publicity, and you might want to just volunteer.
Oh, sure. I'm retired, and I have lots of time.
Please, I'd love to meet you.
I can.
Yes.
Yes.
John, have you ever seen a production from the Medea Project?
You know what? I may have. Like I said, I've been involved in the theater community for ages.
Probably would have remembered, John.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
You know what? I'm sorry. Yeah. I probably.
You're going to be blown away.
Yeah. I've heard their name brought up, but I'll definitely have to come and see them and then get involved.
Well, thank you, John. It's an experience that honestly you cannot forget. Let's talk a little bit about When Did Your Hands Become a Weapon, Rodessa?
Mm-hmm.
You made this theater or this performance also with the Women's HIV Center at UCSF.
Yes. When Did Your Hands Become a Weapon is actually a line that's lifted from a song that one of the women, I did a series of residences at Glide Memorial Church, 10, 15 years ago. And we talked about breaking the cycle of domestic violence. And there was a wonderful young woman that came in. Her name was Tammy, Japanese woman who actually slid me a rap. And it was, When Did Your Hands Become a Weapon? Mm-hmm. And, love should never be a curse. And we added, look at me, I'm a monster. Because that's the other side of it. When you start beating on your woman, your loved one, she puts it somewhere. And more deaths, more women commit crimes in the kitchen. So be aware of that. But When Did Your Hands Become a Weapon was such, right now with the Me Too movement and with, Stormy Daniels and other women stepping forth talking about our fearless leader. It was so ripe. This is so ripe to be talking about women. And there's a piece that I found from Toni Morrison's Beloved. And in and we're doing it in the show. But Morrison, I love Morrison. She just talks about this is flesh we're dealing with here, And it's like that's what even with Christine Ford, it's like that's what happened to this woman. She even says at one point, I was under one of them. It isn't enough that somebody does a cat call out of a car. But if you grab me, you throw me down, the trauma that comes with that, and I kept hearing all the stories and I thought, how do I bring this to the forefront again? Because the Medea Project has always talked about domestic violence. Mm-hmm. And it gets kind of scary because it's par, for women in jail. But when I have to jump up and down and rant and say, but it's not okay. Mm-hmm. It's not okay to be handled, to be mishandled, to be misused. And it's like we have to find ways to push back. Mm-hmm. And it became exercises. When I was in South Africa two years ago, I talked to the women there about violence, domestic violence. And that was a woman who was Hindu, who was in one of my workshops, and she eventually was in the performance because we make a big performance in the prisons in South Africa. But she told, I do prompts as well. I'll give a prompt like, love don't love nobody. Write about it. And this woman wrote about how her husband losing his job and then leaving, and she and her three children were like literally homeless. They had no food, no money. They ended up living in a junkyard. And then this man shows up and decides that he loves her and he wants to take care of her. And he says, your children will never be hungry with me. So she goes home with him. And at first she said it was okay. But he kind of gradually turned into the devil. You know, it was like everybody was too comfortable. Everybody was... she says that she noticed that he started to slap her around in the kitchen as she's feeding her children. And she's saying to the children, just eat, 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 eat. And then he started to literally rape her and assault her in the kitchen in front of her children. He's talking about trauma? And she says, I'm screaming, eat, eat, don't look, eat. And, you know, and this is the power of women, though. And she says one night, when she couldn't take it anymore, she ran into the bedroom where she slept with this man. She said, and I went to the pillow where he always kept a loaded pistol. And she said, I threw it at him and it went off and two bullets hit him and he died 2 days later. And she said to the audience, ladies and gentlemen, that is why I am in prison. And the therapist at Naturena Prison, they came up to me and they said, okay, we need to see your notes. I said, there really are no notes. Other than that, I told her to please write about love, don't love nobody. And the atmosphere was such that she trusted, and her children were there. They were there to bear witness to their mother's story. And I felt like such a part of it, in that all of a sudden they are, it is not just this dark secret of their terrible mother. It was like they got to see their mother live it again, and they lived it again. Mm-hmm. And they were standing in the back of the theater at the end of the evening, tears, you know, but they were thanking me. They were thanking the other women for helping their mother, giving their mother a platform in which to tell the story. They had lived it.
Wow. How much time did this woman get in jail?
She was doing 7 to 10.
Wow.
Yeah, for murder.
Well, and you reminded me, there's a documentary called Sin by Silence, and it's about women in California who are in jail for murdering or trying to murder their abusive partners. And
yes,
these women are, most of them are over 60. A lot of them look like your next door grandma.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, this is...
Well, you know, we don't,
I mean, this
like,
is across the country, but that particular doc is about California.
Well, you know, the culture back to, you know, women voting for Kavanaugh, back to women loving Trump. This is just a piece of it, but it's like, how dare you as a bad girl? Mm. How dare you act out being a bad girl, you know, and fighting back? I grew up in a house, and my dad was my hero, and he loved me, but I remember I got into a couple of fights with my brothers over real stuff, and my father was so done with me. He said, what are you trying to do? You know, you're a girl. You're not supposed to be fighting your brothers. And he said, you know, don't be so hard-headed. I had a one-woman show entitled Big Butt Girls, Hard-Headed Women. My father used to say to me, go sit your big butt down. Don't be so hard-headed. And it was like this whole thing of like, he flipped on me. It's like, no, you've crossed the line. And that's what these women are dealing with. They've crossed the line. You know, it's like, you did what? You fought back? It's insane. We're back to South Africa. Women who would be there for sometimes 5 to 6 months, they got time taken off their sentences for completing my project.
Wow.
Yes. That's how different. Because the authorities had not heard these stories. They had not heard them, you know. And it was wonderful to be like in a situation where the women were going to, you know, sometimes as much as a year, you know, because you finished this project.
Wow.
Which they saw as difficult. The authorities saw it as being, but they loved the idea of this American, you know, coming in and saying, this is what we're going to do. We're going to like open up and we're going to share with the community, with our families, with our children, why we're in prison. And what that will entail is a lot of things. It will entail a lot of things, yeah.
Have you ever proposed that to authorities in the U.S.?
No, you know, as we're talking about it, but you know, even at the jails, and Lord knows I'm grateful that I get to come in with my crew, but it's law and order time in America. it's Law and Order time, and they put and I don't know where the decree is coming from, but it is not what it was. It's not this environment that it was.
You know, we do a lot of shows about prisons, and since you spent a lot of time with women in prisons, have you noticed any changes in the last couple decades in terms of how they're treated, the kind of food they eat, the relationships with the guards? I mean, I'm sure things probably change when you leave, but have you seen any changes?
I tell you, the change that's most abrupt and strange is that they're getting much younger.
Ooh.
Yeah. I think that back to South Africa, the wardens, as they're called, they came to me and said, "We want to do this. We want you to help us to tell our stories," because they had to live on the prison grounds. They were dealing with abuse and violence. But it was like this was their take on it versus here in our country. I think that you're locked down and you are like a guilty until. And we don't know how to embrace a different kind of reform. Now, there are people in and out of the system, yeah, but overall, there's like, right now I'm dealing with a reentry program where Cultural Odyssey is being funded, but as a part of the jail thing here. But it's about, where are these women going to go? How are you preparing them to embrace the workforce? And at the same time, I'm saying, I can do so much, but they've got to have medical, psychiatric attention, you know, to deal with trauma, to deal with addiction. You know, all these things have to be in place. And we're not ready to hear that, or, you know, you get yours like I got mine. You know, you get up off your knees, you stop whining and complaining. Mm. It's the American way.
Right. And you might have a bus ticket to get out of here in the middle of the night, leaving the jails.
Oh, the women leave. Oh, they release women at 4 a.m.
Wow.
4 a.m. Why? And I have talked to women who they know where the bathrooms are in the mission, in the service stations, where they can sleep until morning, if they get that far. Now, I've been working with trans women, and they are like, you know, they'll get busted in the summer with a little summer dress and flip-flops on for prostitution or whatever. And then they are dropped in the middle of the night, middle of the night, and they're left out in front of the jails with no money, nowhere to go, because their families have already... Mm. If they're out, that largely their families are not there for them. And one young woman was telling me, a trans woman was saying, "Well, I was standing out in front of the jails, and I had to do what I do. You know, I held a trick." And she said, "And I went down on my knees and I was crying." Ugh. And this man looked at me and he said, "What's wrong?" And she said, "I just got out of jail, and I'm gonna start doing this. And to do this, I've got to get back on methamphetamine. And he gave her $25, and he said, "Just take care of yourself. You know, it's okay. You know, it's okay. And because you don't think like that about who this is. You know, who this is, an animal. You know, that you buy. Mm. Yeah, but he just like went. She said he was like, but and still, 2 months later, she's back in jail, anyways. It's just finding a place to live, you know, trying to get back to the life that you had before you came in. And I'm just amazed that in our country, that at least trans people have a larger platform and they're seen now. Mm. One young woman in that I met at the city jail, she's at San Quentin. She's a trans woman, and they sent her to San Quentin for 3 years. Go figure.
Wow.
It's like, what? She's at San Quentin. And she's kept largely in solitary confinement.
And for people outside the area, this is an all-male jail.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
I know. And it's as you were saying earlier, well, how do I do it? How do I stay in it? I've had friends who say, well, you can't leave it. You can't stop doing it. I am blessed. The Hewlett Foundation awarded Idris Akamora, that's my partner, some funds to do a sabbatical, so I can finish my book. I mean, I'm at that place. I'm lucky like that, that I get to sort of step away from it after we do the show. So I say to everybody, please come out and see the show. It's a lot of fun, though, too. It's a lot of fun.
It is. I mean, you're just in awe the whole time,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
It's intense, but it is amazing. The show Duradess is talking about is When Did Your Hands Become a Weapon? And if you're in the Bay Area, it runs October 25th through November 4th at the Brava Theater in San Francisco. Rodessa Jones is co-artistic director of Cultural Odyssey. They're celebrating their 40th year. And she also directs the Medea Project, a performance workshop committed to incarcerated women's social and personal transformation. If you're not in the Bay Area, do a search online for the Medea Project and you can watch some videos. Really, really powerful performances. Rodessa, on a personal level, what's it like for you to hear these stories over and over and over again of this deep trauma that these women go through?
Well, I met gratitude a long time ago, you know, a friend of mine took me to see the Dalai Lama. And he talked about this is all that this is the work. This is the heart opening stuff to reach out and help each other, you know. So that helps me a lot. I cry. I cry. I'm overjoyed when I see women get mad. I see them do the exercises, the games around getting mad. And I feel like nobody really did it for me, you know. Art, I found art and art making and theater. And it was that community that embraced me and said, hey, it's cool. You know, you're all right. And everything that you bring to us, we can turn it into art. But there was nobody just saying, look, you know, it's going to be kind of dark and awful out there. And you have a right to a life. You know, you have a right to kick, you know, to kick, scream, fight back. And all of that comes into play. And I've been humbled a lot by it, you know, by the fact that somebody came up to me just two days ago, and she was from Senegal. And she said, you don't remember me. I came out of my house and she said, you remind me of Rodessa Jones. I am. She goes, but you don't remember me. She said, but I came to an audition workshop that you were doing. She said, and I spoke no English. And I'd come to America as a part of the ballet of, I think it was the National Dance Company of Senegal. And she said, you encouraged me to move, do a solo. And she said, and when I finished, I couldn't really express myself. And I got very sad. And she said, and you took my face and put it in your hands and you lifted my chin and you said, don't worry about it. You're beautiful. And I don't remember it at all. Mm. But she said, that's what you did for me. You know, she said that, and it happens all the time. It just happens all the time. So I get lots of hugs and squeezes because it's, I throw out a lifeline. You throw out a lifeline. You know, I mean, I feel like when I listen to KL, your show here, and I'm at home and I go, go, Rose, go, because sometimes it's difficult. The subject is, but somebody's got to do it, mm-hmm. and there are people that appreciate it, you know. So, and I'm blessed as an artist. As a woman that knows something about the truth and knowing now, you know, an African American woman, you know, I feel like all these are blessings. And like I said, I've learned to cry. I don't cry as much. Mm. And I have long, intense talks with my granddaughter. We're going through some stuff right now, but we can talk to each other, you know. And that's all because she's seen me work with women, but that's how I handle it. And it's not always easy. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I still smoke and I really should stop. And I think I'm still smoking cigarettes. So, you know, and I keep my bourbon nearby, but I don't really drink bourbon all the time, but it's my drink when I need one. Yeah.
I feel like after the election, a lot of us turned to some kind of vice, right?
Yeah. Yes, we did. We did.
Final thoughts, Rodessa, on the performance. When Did Your Hands Become a Weapon? What else can we expect?
We're gathering jokes. We're gathering male-based jokes. We like to just have moments in the show where we go, oh, I got one. And one of my favorites is, behind every great man is a very surprised woman. But go to our page. Go to the Medea Project Theater for Incarcerated Women / the HIV Circle and post us jokes. We may very well use them. We might serve some kind of food during the show. There'll be a sing along. We found the Beatles song that's really quite treacherous. Mm. You know, you better run for your life if you can, little girl. I think we're gonna get the audience to sing along. So there'll be it's gonna be a ritualized forum in a lot of ways. Yes, we'll have our stories, and there's some of them are harrowing, but there's beautiful voices, there'll be music, there's going to be a movement, a lot of movement, but it'll be an evening of, hopefully it'll be even a healing where, I'm not quite finished with it yet, but I might create a spot where we can do an Oprah moment and someone can share their story. I told my story about being assaulted, at the University of Pittsburgh. It was part of my talk. And I began by saying that my rapist was speckled and everybody's like this. And I said at the end, you know, it's just about, let's put it on the table. It's actually a lot like abortion. You know, we don't talk about it, but most women have either thought about it or had to do it, you know. And it's okay. You know, I think if there's a God in her heaven, she's cool. She's cool with us. She's just, she doesn't know what's going on in Washington, but she's cool with us, you know. She's cool with us, yeah.
Rodessa Jones is co-artistic director of the San Francisco-based performance company Cultural Odyssey, which is celebrating its 40th year. She also directs the Medea Project, a performance workshop committed to incarcerated women's social and personal transformation. And if you're in the Bay Area, I hope you can see Rodessa's latest piece, When Did Your Hands Become a Weapon? It runs October 25th through November 4th at the Brava Theater in San Francisco. I have to say, Rodessa, our producer Laura Wenis just said, listening to Rodessa is like taking a warm bath. Can we bring you back every month or every week? Please.
Please, please. I'd love to come back. Okay. And I love to talk.
Well, we love you. Thank you so much, Rodessa. I can't wait to see the performance. Thank you. Coming up tomorrow, it's our media roundtable. We'll discuss coverage of the alleged killing of Washington Post columnist Jamal Khashoggi. Mounting evidence points to the Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman's role in Khashoggi's gruesome killing. We will also discuss how casino billionaire Sheldon Adelson influences Donald Trump's policies on Israel. The Republican mega donor gave $20 million to Trump's campaign and is spending at least $55 million to keep Republicans in control of Congress. That is tomorrow. If you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line. yourcall@kalw.org. Your Call is produced here at KALW in San Francisco. You can podcast our show. Visit yourcallradio.org. Thanks to Laura Wenis for producing today's show, and thanks to Kevin Vance, who's at the controls. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.